Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
So here it goes, only the bird. And so I've been told that I'm only growing older. Yes, I am. So here it goes, only the bird. Your letter again.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Jamie Lu? Do y'all like Jamie? Jamie Lu is a singer-songwriter out of Russellville, Arkansas, a winner at Harvest Songwriting Competition, and most recently featured in the artist spotlight of Night Flying Magazine. More can be found at reverbnation.jamielu. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to another edition of Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, both right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my right here strumming is 1931 National Resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. A native of Arkansas, Mark was the longtime sideman for bluesman John So Blue Weston. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? Our featured artist tonight is Little Rock multimedia artist Carla McGoldrick, and our featured piece is this piece right over here entitled Galaxy, which is for sale. Our listeners can find out more about this piece and Carla at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Tonight, our stories all involve, in one way or another, cars. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Later tonight, Mike Nolan tests his car one time too many. And we'll end the night with Carmen Gillum on an Arkansas highway and a speedometer that stops at 85. But let's start the night with Patrick Goss, as he is the passenger in a car that goes off the grid in The Long Ride.
I'm not one of those men who will not look at a map or ask directions. As a matter of fact, I love maps. I just have the special gift for finding places that a trial lawyer who has traveled the state for 40 years has. So at our last Wednesday lunch before the 4th of July, when my friend David passed out maps to me and our other friends that would guide us to his weekend retreat near Rosebud, I scarcely glanced at mine. The four of us, Bill, David, Rick, and I, went to North Little Rock High in the 60s, and have reconnected in the past 8 years. Except for David, we're a tame crowd. We meet for lunch at Panera Bread every other Wednesday at 11:30 for years until Rick asked us to put back the meeting time 15 minutes, a request we had to think about for a while. Bill and I have worked out at the same time on Wednesday evening for years, and worked out at the same time on Saturday morning until my occasionally taking my grandson Jack to his gymnastics class forced some uncomfortable flexibility on us. We do not eat the same food at Panera, but except for David, we eat the same half sandwich cup of soup special and eschew the offer of a cheap dessert. David, being more adventuresome, has a salad, the same one every week. I've practiced law for 40 years at only two firms and lived in the same house with my wife, Judy, for 36 years. Bill has had two jobs, chemical engineer and medical doctor, and several houses. David and Rick lived in other states for years and have been, variously, a fighter pilot, a contractor and developer, a business owner, a college teacher, an insurance company executive, and a health clinic manager. After glancing briefly at the map, which was more like a six-page booklet than a map, at that Wednesday lunch, I put it in my jacket pocket. Rick suggested that he and his wife, Jackie, pick me and Judy up and drive to Rosebud, and we accepted. Independence Day arrived. From my glance at the map, I knew we drove up Highway 5, which was consistent with my trial lawyer's knowledge of the area, so I left the map in my study. I did not consider that my knowledge was limited by the fact that there are no county seats in the vicinity. I navigated to Highway 5 and asked for Rick's map. It was not anything like the map David gave me. As I tried to flip through the six pages of Rick's map booklet while simultaneously watching the road, I could see that David intended us to follow a yellow trail. Think of the yellow brick road. On each page until it gave out, and then turn the page and find the overlap. The problem was that Highway 5 was not on Rick's map. We realized quickly, not surprising, since we have more than a half a dozen college and professional school and graduate degrees among us, that David had prepared a map booklet to guide Rick and Jackie from Maumelle and another to guide me and Judy from the Heights in Little Rock, and that the Heights map was of little use since it was in my study. So we started working our way back to a highway or town on Rick's map. We found Highway 107, the ARCMO highway of my youth, and headed north. We were still south of where 107 showed up on page 4 of Rick's map booklet, but we were sure we would get there. We came to a highway intersection. I thought that if we continued to cross the intersecting highway, we would still be on 107. We were not. After driving 15 minutes, we asked some men working on a house if we were on 107. The head man said, "No. Stay on this road until you come to a T and turn right." We were sure the T was just over the next rise. On this stretch of road, we tried to figure out how close we were by thinking of how far we had driven. Rick said, "David says it takes them an hour to get here from North Little Rock." I thought, I have not been able to locate us on this map pamphlet for an hour. And I thought I knew where we were for an hour before I realized we were not on the map. After 10 more minutes, we came to the T. I realized the carpenter knew we should make a right turn, even though he did not know where we were going, because 107 went north only. We went 50 feet and saw a sign, Enola 3, Barney 7. Enola and Barney were on our map. In fact, the turn to the retreat was less than a mile north of Barney. And I had heard of Enola, so I knew we were still in Arkansas. At this point, Judy, who lived in Conway from the age of 12 until we graduated from college, said, "I'm going home through Conway." Find comfort where you can. We went through Enola and were studying on Barney. We also were studying on Tanyard Road, which was where we turned on to get to Cedar Creek Road, where the retreat is located. The pages of the map had scales at the bottom, and I realized that one of our problems had been that the scale on each page of the map booklet was different. Rick sensed we had gone too far, and Judy saw that White Oak Lane was an intersecting road. I found White Oak Lane on the next to last page of the map, 3 miles north of Tanyard Road. We turned around and headed south. By then, I knew how to navigate with the scale at the bottom, but we still almost missed Tanyard because someone had bent the street sign double. We were late, but not by much, and the large group was doing fine without us. I told David what had happened, and he told me we had not strayed that far from the suggested route. I also told him we had tried to call him on his cell phone, as he suggested, when we realized we were lost but got no answer. He said, "I'm not surprised. Cell phone service is pretty spotty up here." I asked for a quicker way home. When you come down Cedar Creek Road to its intersection with Tanger, turn left, not right. drive to the T at Mount Vernon, turn right onto Highway 36, follow that to Highway 5, turn right again, and you'll be to 67-167 before you know it. We did as he instructed. We never saw Highway 5. But 36 took us back to the T where we had turned north onto 107. The turn to the south quickly took us to Highway 64 and a choice to turn left and go to BB or right and go to Conway. We turned right to fulfill Judy's wish and to be sure we got home without using a map.
Pat Goss, a Little Rock resident, has used his storytelling skills in 40 years as a trial lawyer. He and his wife, Judy, a former Tales presenter, have two daughters, two sons-in-law, and two grandchildren. Next, Mike Nolan is 18 and trying once again to beat the clock as he races down the road in Hot Rod.
Fifty-five miles per hour was the speed limit in 1978, and it took 2 hours and 20 minutes to get from North Little Rock to Brinkley to Jonesboro. I was attending Arkansas State University and would make that drive many times. Usually the trips were very dull. Life, however, has a way of giving you a dope slap when you least expect it. Early on, my friend Jay and I had made a very speedy trip home from school that was both idiotic and exhilarating. It took us only about an hour and a half to get from Jonesboro to home. With our hair blown straight back and our faces glowing as red as the engine, we were euphoric. The fact that we were driving in Jay's convertible with the top down may have been part of the reason for our feelings and appearance, but not all of it. We had pushed the limits of stupidity, and like typical 18-year-old males, we wanted more. We had made several more attempts at beating that time with little success. We were even pulled over while driving in separate cars on the way back once. Yet, I hadn't given up on breaking that record. On a lovely Sunday afternoon, I was blasting down the road like a maniac. The two-lane blacktop between Brinkley and Jonesboro was as flat and straight as a yardstick. I had made it to Brinkley in record time and was sure that I would beat the hour-and-a-half mark. My eight-track was blaring the Doobie Brothers, and there were no cars in sight. Then, on the horizon, a speck appeared. It was coming from far away, but I couldn't tell what kind of car it was. So I started to slow down, but apparently not enough. In a blink, I saw it was a cop car. Too late. I started tapping my brakes, but he was already on me. As we passed each other, he gave me the stink eye and pointed his index finger at me. That's not good. In my rearview mirror, I saw him wheel around and quickly hit the lights. I was toast. Dang it! Record shot! Since this wasn't the first time I was stopped, I would just play nice and hopefully get a warning and move along. I pulled over very carefully. When he got out of the car, I could tell he was an overweight, older man with the mirrored glasses made famous by the sadistic guard in the Paul Newman classic Cool Hand Luke. I was beginning to feel a little less confident. I was certain that I couldn't handle hard time nearly as well as Paul Newman had. For one thing, I didn't like hard-boiled eggs. But then as now, I could be very charming. Seriously, big puppy dog eyes, extremely polite, but not so polite as to make you want to smack me. When Johnny Law strolled up to my window, I had my license and registration all ready to go. Without a word, he held out his hand and all the while staring at me. At least I think he was staring at me. I couldn't really tell. After a long silence, when all I could hear was my heart beating, he finally spoke. "Son," he said, "why don't you come back to my car?" Oh, my God. This didn't sound good at all. I'd never had any dealings with the police when I'd been asked to get into their car. I was in the middle of farmland without another soul in sight. In fact, not a single car had passed by since the whole thing began. My mind started racing as he escorted me to the patrol car. Would he kill me here? Or take me straight to the penitentiary or the farm or the rock or whatever they called it? After we got in the car, he removed his Smokey the Bear hat and finally took off his sunglasses. He looked at me like I had just drawn a beard and mustache on his mother's picture. My day was about to get a lot worse. I could just feel it. I was imagining my parents putting my face on milk cartons after I never made it back to school. I just hope they used a good picture. Johnny Law finally started talking. You know how fast you was going back there, boy? Actually, I didn't. Not because I wasn't paying attention, but the speedometer on my car maxed out at 80 miles an hour. And I had pushed the needle way past that, so I really had no idea what my speed was. I croaked out an answer. No, sir, I don't. He said as he wrote something down. When I hit you with the radar gun, you was coming down through the 90s. Wow. My little Chevy Monza could really move, but smiling was probably not a good idea about now. Where are you going in such a hurry, son? This answer was certain to seem made up, but sadly it was the truth. I'm trying to get back for church. I play in the ASU trombone choir, and we're performing for a church in Jonesboro tonight. Truth. And I was scared I would be late. Lie. He said, really? Yes, sir. Guess I better get this moving along then, don't I? You ever had a speeding ticket before? Oh, man, he's going to love this. Yes, sir. One about 3 months ago back in Little Rock. He smiled at that one. I could practically smell the satisfaction on his breath as he got on his radio to call it in. Let me just check this out real quick. Hey, Jimmy, you got any records for a Mike Nolan? My mind was racing faster than I had been driving. Would they impound my car? Would they beat me into admitting crimes I didn't commit? Yes, I kidnapped and brainwashed Patty Hearst. And I'm the godfather of the Gambino crime family. And yes, I taught Tricky Dick Nixon how to use a tape recorder. I did it all. Just please stop no more. Suddenly, a jolt of electricity surged through my body. I had just remembered something I needed to tell him. And I had to tell him before he found out on his own. Excuse me, officer, I forgot to mention that I recently got a ticket in Jonesboro. When you asked me about tickets, I thought you only meant on highways. Sorry about that. He stopped talking and just looked at me. One corner of his mouth curled into a smile as he said, looks like we got us a real little hot rod here, don't we? I was dead. Not just dead, but torn asunder, which seems a lot worse than dead. With barely contained glee, he called Jimmy back and told him I had another ticket. We sat in silence as he stared at me, like a Razorback fan watching the last few seconds tick off of the clock as we beat the Texas Longhorns. He was giddy. Then the radio came back to life. Hey, I ain't got nothing on that kid. What? He said. What? I thought. Yeah, nothing's coming up. If he's got tickets, none of them are showing up. Johnny Law looked like he just found out that Hee-Haw had been canceled. He was devastated, and I was in shock. Had that really just happened? Would I live after all? Well, Hot Rod, looks like you caught a break. What church did you say you were playing at? I told him, and then he started to smile again. Well, that happens to be my church. Looks like we got ourselves a date. Better get going now, because I'll be watching for you. And if you ain't there playing tonight, you'll be hearing from me, slick. Now get out of here. And if I ever catch you speeding through my county again, I will nail your butt to the courthouse wall. With a renewed sense of life and hubris of youth, I told him, "Don't worry, officer. You'll never catch me speeding through your county again." Later, I spent the entire church performance looking for Johnny Law. I didn't see him, but I could feel him out there, just watching.
Mike Noland has been teaching and directing plays and musicals at North Little Rock High School for 25 years. He has 3 plays published by Big Dog Norman Maine Publishers that have been performed all over the country. Spending time with his wife Dina and his lovely family makes him the happiest of all. In our final story of the night, Carmen Gillum's Mustang and her words get away from her in Maxine Still Got It.
It was in Arkansas last year, just past the crest of a hill, that I ran afoul of the law. I saw him before he flipped on his lights, but not in time to brake much. I checked the speedometer, 85. That could mean anything. 85 is as far as the numbers go. I pulled over, feeling a little rattled. God knows how much this ticket was going to be. The cop stood at my window looking me over. "Afternoon, ma'am. I need your license, registration, proof of insurance." I handed him my license. "How old is this Mustang anyway?" he ventured. "It's a 93, I muttered in a small voice. The only registration I could find was from the previous year. My insurance card was from the last time I had re-upped it, not the time 2 weeks before. He waited patiently while I fumbled around with my paperwork and was kind enough to take what I could assemble without comment. I was sure he could sense the sweat on my palms. He came back from running my license, ticket book in hand. "Do you know why I stopped you?" "Yeah," I replied. "Maxine kind of got away from me." "Oh, for the love of God." I really try not to call my car by name in front of people who don't know me. It makes them think you're crazy, especially cops. I'd left Kansas around noon. That meant it would be at least midnight before I got home to Mississippi, probably later. I'd been there nearly a month, but it didn't matter. It was always hard to leave my daughter's house. I loved them also, all of them. The AC hadn't worked in the car for several years. The sun blazed down, despite the huge black thunderheads looming all around me. They always managed to taunt me from just off to one side, smelling ever so slightly of rain. There was a wrong turn coming out of Ponca City that made the drive 45 minutes longer right off the top. And of course there was the standard getting lost coming through Tulsa event. So another hour was wasted. Just outside Muskogee, the rain that had been traveling was in smell of me all day, quit teasing me and came down in a torrential flood. It cut the heat for the merest moment, but raised the humidity to breath-defying levels. Finally, I reached the Arkansas border. As I passed by Fort Smith, the temperature began to moderate. Cool green trees surrounded me. I could smell the river below. I headed toward Conway, uphill and down, admiring the wildflowers and gazing longingly at the cool blue lakes at the bottom of the hills. We'd been together a long time, Maxine and I. She wasn't a new car when I got her. In fact, she was nearly 10 years old. Now I'd had her more than 10 years. In 5 more years, she'll qualify for an antique tag. She's hauled my kids and my grandkids, dogs, friends, innumerable plants, and way more than her share of cow manure. One autumn, I'd run across a deal on used landscape timber for $1 apiece. I must have bought 20 of them and had them delivered to the yard at work. Maxine hauled them home, 2 or 3 at a time, 3 being the maximum number of 8-foot landscape timbers one can put in a Mustang. Over the course of the winter, The next spring, we built the flower beds in the front yard. During the hauling phase, a friend called one day, just about the time I made it to my hometown. She was in search of a ride as her car was down. "Well," I told her, "it might take me a minute. I've got 3 landscape timbers and a tree, a 4-foot althea that I'd gotten a really good price on, plus my luggage in here, and I'm going to have to go home and unload first." After a rather long pause, she managed a fairly subdued, "Okay." It was a really long time before she asked for another ride. Maxine's name evolved over time. I tend to name the cars I love, and make no mistake, I love Maxine. So early on in our association, I was trying out names. She wasn't a Betsy kind of car. Molly, Millie, Roxy, Sally, nothing seemed to fit. Then one day, shortly after having an action movie marathon night, in which Mel Gibson's work played a large role, my youngest son glanced at the car and said, "You know how some cars look like they're grinning and some look like they're sleeping? This car looks angry all the time." Mad Maxine was born. The Road Warrior Queen came after numerous trips. Trips to Kansas, Missouri, Texas, Arkansas and Florida, Dallas, Wichita and Columbus, St. Louis and St. Augustine. Trips to see grandchildren born and friends pass. Once I took a trip in her to go meet a lot of people I only knew from the internet. Trips to go camping and trips to work. I'd spent a lot of time in Maxine, as evidenced by the debris piled in the back that I was now hoping the cop wouldn't see, as I silently prayed he had not heard me call her by her name. No such luck. The hand that was about to open the ticket book paused. "What did you say?" I stammered out some stuff about Maxine being what I called the car for short, and how I'd had her a long time. My face was bright red, and I was staring unwaveringly at my lap. The more I talked, the crazier I sounded. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw his lips start to twitch. "Maxine is the car's name?" "Yes," I said, "but not her whole name." I nodded and turned a darker shade of red. "Tell me her whole name." It was not a request. "Mad Maxine, the Road Warrior Queen." I was now a color rarely seen in nature. I sneaked a look at my policeman. His lips were twitching and the corners of his eyes crinkled in a manner I've come to recognize. He put the ticket book back in his pocket, folded his arms, placing one hand on his chin in such a manner that it effectively concealed his mouth, and said, "What are you and Maxine doing out here today? I can see you're not from here." So I told him. I told him about my daughter's surgery and my grandkids and how hot it had been in Oklahoma that day as I drove along, smelling the rain that wouldn't fall, how good Maxine was to come all that way without any trouble, and what a wonderful car she was. I told him about the rain I'd come through and the rain I could see across the valley there that I still had to drive through before I could stop in Little Rock and have dinner with a friend. I told him about the 5 more hours I would have to drive in the smothering after-dinner dark through mostly vacant country, humid and still, before eventually reaching Mississippi. Finally, he said he'd heard enough. He lectured me a bit on the dangers of speeding and told me about fatalities and wrecks he'd seen and how they looked. He'd expressed the opinion that my kids would probably be very upset to see me like that and that my funeral would be closed casket. Denying my grands a chance to say goodbye. He then told me that his radar was on the blink and he didn't know how fast I was going. But if he were forced to guess, he would say at least 100. I must have looked impressed because he then told me that my car didn't look like it should be allowed on the road, let alone go anything like that fast. His final words just were, "Okay, Grandma, you and Maxine go on home now. Slower." He was grinning openly when we pulled away.
Carmen Gillum is single and living in Natchez, Mississippi. Today is her birthday. She writes a blog called South of Where at WordPress.com. Maxine hit a deer and had to stay home tonight. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers, thank you to our live audience, and thank you to ULR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by William F. Lehman Public Library, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Writers' Colony at Derry Hollow, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, YouTube, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
So I have this cat, and her name is Catherine Black, and so I decided I would make a song about her, but what she would be like as a person.
Hello, my name is Catherine Black. Sleep alone on a king-size mat, and I roam the hallways of this dusty old house as a mouse in my kitchen, and he freaks me out.
One day, she got the courage up. She said,
"Hello, my name is Catherine Black. I've shiny black hair and I prance like a cat. And I'm just down the street if you like to meet. I'll make us a nice treat with tuna meat. Oh, how I waited, but he never came. like I'm invisible. Me,
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. More at robinwoodbnb.com. Experience tales in person as a member of our live audience. Schedule and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.